All right, it's now time for our speaker. Let's give a warm welcome to Kip.
Hi, I'm Kip. First, I'd like to thank Tim for asking me to speak. I had been asked a couple of times, and I kept putting it off. I thought that 2012 would save me from having to come up here, but didn't work out that way, so you guys are stuck with me. I do have a few bullet points here, so that's what helps me stay on track. I just want to start by welcoming the newcomers. This is a good place. I remember crawling in here and just being frightened. I sat in the second row to the back because I didn't want anyone to know I was a newcomer. I came with Bruce. This was years ago. And about halfway through the meeting, I was telling him, I got to sneak out of here, man. I can't handle it. I was having an anxiety attack. But I had been in the program for a couple of months, and I had learned about journaling. And I went home, and I journaled that night. And what I wrote down, the first sentence I wrote down is, am I willing to put in the time necessary to feel comfortable at this meeting? And the truth was that I wasn't, because I had four other nights that I was going to meetings. And the beauty was the second thing that I wrote down, which was, am I willing to put in the time necessary to feel comfortable with my daughter's future? And then the next thing I wrote, am I willing to put in the time necessary to feel comfortable with my son's baseball games? And that's the beauty that this program gives us. It's not just about the alcoholic that got us here. It's about how are we going to choose to live our lives. That's what we get to learn here. I already said my name is Kip. My sponsor is Chris P. My current home group is the Friday night Woodland Hills Tradition 5. My commitments are, as of right now, sponsoring. I get the honor of sponsoring men in the program. I have been, you know, secretary, literature, co-secretary, chairs, coffee, you name it, I've done it. Commitments were a big part of my recovery. And currently I'm working on the 10th tradition at a Paths to Recovery with my sponsor. Again, to the newcomers, I'd just like to welcome you once again and, you know, listen for similarities. You know, as you go to those first meetings, you know, you can find whatever you're looking for. So if you're looking for a clique, you'll find that. If you're looking for a group you don't belong with, you'll find that. But if you change a few words and look for the similarities, you know, you'll find that. Just keep an open ear. You know, like for me, I remember the literature when I first came in, it said something like, if someone else's breathing bothers you, you're in the right place. So once I heard that, I knew I was in the right place. So I do have some secrets to share about recovery, and if you stick around long enough as I muddle through my talk, I'll tell you those secrets. I know we're supposed to talk about, you know, what happened, what tools helped me, and, you know, how I am today. So I'll just start from the beginning. I was raised in a perfectly normal alcoholic home. So that gave me the attributes that really qualified me to be here. You know, being self-employed, thinking I was a perfectionist, wanting things my way, knowing how to solve your problems, being an expert at everything. You know, of course, what I learned coming here is as long as I was doing all those things, I didn't have to look in the mirror. And there's a saying here of put down the magnifying glass and pick up the mirror, and I get to do that now. So being raised in that environment, that made me attracted to alcoholics. That made me attractive to alcoholic women. You know, There's a few in here. I know who you are. I spotted you right away. And I'm not going there. I have a wonderful lady here. This is Laura. Everyone say hi to Laura. Okay, so what got me to Al-Anon? You know, after muddling through my life in that alcoholic home, you know, I tell some of the guys, especially at our shorter meetings, you know, all you got to say is, you know, I was married to, or my father was, or my brother is, and we can fill in the rest, you know. We can fill in all those gory details. So it's easy enough for me to just leave it at that. But, you know, it wasn't my father that got me here. I had to go through my life and make the choices that I made. I always felt like I was smart, and I did not choose an alcoholic to marry. You know, I wanted to be able to leave my kids with someone and trust them. And even though I dated a lot of alcoholics, I kind of didn't trust them below the surface because I had just seen what happens. I know the lies that go along with it. And that relationship lasted 7 years. I did get two beautiful children out of that deal, and then I got bored and, you know, went looking for that alcoholic, and I found a sober one. She had some sober time, and I thought, okay, that's great. I won't have to deal with the chaos of living with an active alcoholic. And so I think that lasted about 5 years, that relationship. Actually lasted 10, but it was 5 years into that relationship. She had three children, I had two, so we kind of had our own little Brady Bunch going, and every other weekend we didn't have kids because our respective partners would take the kids, so we kind of had a honeymoon every other weekend. But about 5 years into that relationship, one of her husbands got killed, and all of a sudden we were full-time parents, and things changed. And they changed dramatically. And what I didn't know at that time was that she started using again, and I didn't notice it. You know, we can look at somebody else and say, you know, you guys, you got problems there, but when it's happening to you, it doesn't happen dramatically overnight. You know, where our relationship started and where it finished were two different places, and they were subtle increments that got it to that point. That gives me one of my sayings, which is, I know I belong in Al-Anon because I would give her only one more chance, but 100 more times. So anyway, 5 years into that, she started using. I didn't notice what had happened, but suddenly there were these mysteries in the household. Things were missing, money was missing, events were... We were canceling events, we weren't being invited to a lot of places, and as it turns out, she was stealing money from me. You know, I found out about that, and what she did is she went into a rehab, and being the diligent, you know, Al-Anon that I am, it was my duty to pay for that and to stick with her, and that's what I did. And I figured, you know, certainly that'd be the last time it would happen, because anybody with half a brain wouldn't continue to use and destroy the family like that. And that lasted about a year, and then she started doing it again. So that was pretty difficult. It destroyed our family. You know, I still didn't have the guts to leave. You know, like I said, I just keep giving her more chances. Just draw that line a little farther back, and that's what I did. And then the third time that it happened, my mother suggested that I go to Al-Anon. And I thought, you know, on a daily basis back then, it was 5 years in, her third relapse, we were together 10 years, here I am, I'm with my soulmate. You know, all she has to do is, you know, think about what's going on, and of course she'll stop, you know, and I'm not understanding the disease of alcoholism, that she doesn't have a choice. I'm thinking she's making conscious choices. So on a daily basis, people would say to me, Kip, what's wrong? And I used to refer to them as my regular friends, but our literature refers to them as our uninformed friends and relatives. And they would say, you know, hey, you got to get out of that thing. You got to leave her. You know, they had the quick and easy answer from the outside looking in, but they didn't know how I felt. They didn't know how incrementally that I had got to that point. So when my mom suggested that I come here, I did it. You know, I came. I went to a meeting, and at that first meeting, I heard that I wasn't responsible for her actions. And that was a relief because I had spent the whole time together feeling responsible for her actions, you know, feeling embarrassed if she made a mistake, especially the last 5 years. You know, she was my partner. That was, we were in this thing together. And when I heard that, it was like a relief to think, okay, so maybe I just got to start worrying about myself, because those are the kind of shares that I heard. What I heard was, get a sponsor, get a commitment, do the step work, get involved, go to meetings. And that's what I did. So I started going to a lot of meetings. The second meeting that I went to, I mean, I crawled in these rooms. I didn't walk in. I crawled in. The second meeting that I went to was a book study. There was me and there was 14 ladies at that meeting. And I was just looking at that clock tick every second, you know. I did not like the ladies at that point, you know, because of what mine had done to me or what I had allowed to happen to me. You know, I thought of everything. I thought about sneaking out on the break. I thought about faking the phone call, faking the emergency. And I just barely stuck it out through that meeting and, you know, kind of got away quick at the end, said a couple of quick goodbyes and left. And I couldn't believe that I made it and heard things about a higher power and why did he put me through that. Well, a week later, I went to the Friday night Woodland Hills meeting, and it's a meeting about as big as this. And as I walked up and again and just saw all those people, you know, probably 30 feet from the door, I was ready to bolt and run. And it turns out that seven of those women from that meeting were there, and they started saying, hey, Kip, come on over here. And it was like, wow. And they started introducing me to people, starting introducing me to a lot of people in this room. And I felt a part of. So that was one of my secrets, was to feel a part of. But like I said, in the journaling, you know, how do I be a part of? Am I willing to put the time in to feel a part of? Am I willing to come early and shake some hands? You know, if I hear something about fellowship afterward, am I willing to try something different and go do that? And luckily, I was desperate enough to want things to change that I did. And I started making a lot of friends, and I got a sponsor right away. And I got a lot of commitments right away. And I started working the steps right away. And slowly things started to change. You know, she was going to her meetings and I was going to mine. I have this thing where I would say, I tell the guys I sponsor also, try not to make any changes for a year. You know, no big decisions. Don't sell the house. Don't move out. Don't get married. None of those things. Just try our program and try doing the step work. Find out who you are and see if it's different, you know, because for me it was. Things started to be different. About 6 months into my Al-Anon program, I'm at my men's meeting. It's a Monday night, and I never would bring my phone in, but when I went out to the car, it had, you know, basically blown up. The kids had called numerous times, and I called them, and I said, what's going on? And they were, you know, frantic. You know, mom's in jail. We got to bail her out. And I just said, hey, it's a school night, and I'll be home in about 10 minutes. And I want you guys to just relax, and we're going to get some sleep tonight. And it was my program that had kicked in. What the kids didn't know is the day before that, I had gone to her, and I said, you know, I've been doing my program for 6 months. I was doing a step a month. I was on the sixth step. Things were changing dramatically for me. And I told her, I said, I'm moving in this direction, and I don't feel you moving with me in that direction. You're going to your meetings three nights a week. And she, you know, and she let me know in so many words how bad our program was. And how full of BS it was. And it was the next day that she got pulled over for speeding and had drugs and alcohol and stolen checks and those kind of things in her car. The beauty of that, there's a couple of things that I appreciate out of that. One is that by coming to these meetings, I started to get my intuition back. My intuition was completely gone when I got here, because for 5 years, you know, I would see something red on the floor and she'd say, "Oh, you don't see that." And I go, "Really? I don't see that?" You know, that's how it is for us. I think Al-Anons are also gullible, you know. I don't know what it is, you know. We want to believe. The other beautiful thing about that was that was my higher power doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Because like I said, I would have just keep giving her chances. And that time, I told her, "You're going to have to figure this one out on your own. You know, I'm not going to foot the bill. I'm not going to work 80 hours to pay for that lawyer, the bail bondsman. I'm just not going to go through it. You have to work it out yourself." And that was good. That was good for me. A year and a half after that, once she did her time and all that stuff, she did come to me when she actually was sober, and she did thank me for that. She thanked me for taking away the soft pillow. And she said that every time she screwed up, I was always there to catch her or put the soft pillow down. And she thanked me for not doing it that last time so that she could finally make the change for herself. You know, we don't want to hear that when we first come in here, but we hear other people talk about it, and it's hard to learn it and to start doing it. But luckily for me, I was able to do that. You know, I do want to thank my sponsor, Chris P. He no matter what I did, he would always say, "Well, it sounds like you've thought about it, and that's a good idea." I would go to him, you know, trying to get an answer, and he'd say, "You know, what do you think?" That's another beauty of this program, is that we don't give advice. The whole basis of what we're doing here is we're talking about what I did and how it worked. And that's why I say, when you go to a meeting, just listen. If you don't like what you're hearing, the beauty is you can learn what not to do. I get that at meetings, too. I learn what not to do. I can just have that in the back of my brain going, "Man, I don't want to go down that road, buddy. I think I'll pass on that one." And other times we get to learn what to do. When I first came in, they talked about these off-sites. I know it's not whatever conference approved and those kind of things, but you know, if you get an opportunity to go to one of these off-sites or one of the men's workshops or whatever it is, Catalina, you know, I highly suggest it. I was in 6 weeks, and my sponsor's like, "Go to this, you know, off-site men's meeting." And I'm going, "Oh, man, I don't know if I can do that." And so I did. I committed to go, and I drove. There was 50 men, and when the way I saw it, there were 50 cars in the parking lot. And so everyone was thinking the same thing I was. If there's something weird about this, I'm out of here, you know. And we all think alike, you know. The beauty is now when I go to those, I can carpool. You know, it's not a big deal. At that first workshop, there was a gentleman sitting in the corner, and you know, I still have the judgmental mind. I walked in, and I'm, you know, looking at this guy and thinking, "Man, this guy looks weird or whatever." And my brain does that. And there's a couple of you out there that are kind of weird too. Yeah, I spotted you guys too. But I'm sure you spotted me, you know. But anyway, we draw cards, and it turns out that he was my prayer partner, you know. So once again, I'm, you know, like looking at my higher power like, "Yeah, you know, I got nothing in common with this guy, and you're matching me up with him." And, you know, the beauty was that he had a lot of inspirational things to say. Taking that into mind, you know, sometimes at a meeting, I might not like the way somebody looks, but I can shut my eyes and listen for the message. You know, I highly suggest doing that also. Just listen for the message. Look for that little tidbit that's going to help you. That gentleman's name was Rodney, and one of the things he said at that first workshop was that God gives us a lot of gifts, but most of them are wrapped in problems. And I could really relate to that. because I was getting a lot of gifts, but I wasn't willing to unwrap the problem. And that kept me going, you know, that kept me going for like 6 months. I couldn't wait till the next workshop to see him again and get another tidbit. And he did. He always had another tidbit. You know, at that next workshop, he said, there's only one way to coast, and that's downhill. And that's an important one, you know, because as we learn what we learn in here, well, at least as I learn what I learn in here, I want to coast, you know. I just want to wish that momentum would take me, you know, but it doesn't. I've got to keep doing the work. And that was a good little tidbit to get from him. Another beauty about that situation is I get the honor of sponsoring him now. You know, that's a gift that I get. But from the things that he told me at that first workshop, you know, I didn't mess around here. I didn't goof off. I didn't come late and leave early and read the step work and do it on my own in my own mind. I wrote it out and I did it with my sponsor. And I talked about it and I started sponsoring other guys and having them write it out and working it out with them. And that's where the changes came for me. So that's just another gift. As far as the step work goes, I'm trying to get a petition together for Virginia Beach because I think they're out of order. You know, I don't like having the third one that quick. You know, I get to the third step and I'm supposed to turn this over. And any of you that have done them, you might agree with me. The third should come after the 12th. You know. So if any of you want to sign that, I'll have that up here after. You know, we jump in and they're talking about turning our will over and we're new and we're fresh in this thing. And we keep taking it back. We don't trust. But I'll tell you what, after my 12th step, I truly was able to turn things over and I was able to believe and I was able to let things go. After that step work, I jumped into my traditions and right away I uncovered a lot of things about myself. And I got anxiety. I think I uncovered too much stuff and I got anxiety. But these rooms taught me that I could get outside help. And that's what I did. I went to a therapist and she understood the 12 steps. And she had her own methods. And I was able to, I went in, she's like, I'll cure you. I'm like, thank God, you know, because I definitely, I'm the type that I didn't want to medicate, you know. And I was looking for a cure. And I wouldn't have been able to seek that help had it not been for Al-Anon because, you know, I've got to do things on my own prior to this program. It's up to me to figure this thing out, and I don't need anybody's help. But guess what? I ask for a lot of help these days, and it always pays off when I go to my brothers and sisters in this program. Another one of the offsites I did was Catalina. And at that Catalina workshop, that's where I had the pleasure of meeting Laura. We've been together a little over 4.5 years now. We met there in Catalina. We were just friends. My relationship with the other lady was over. I wasn't looking for a relationship. My sponsor had told me, you know, whatever you do, make sure you're friends with her. It was something completely different. I had to do a lot of contrary action. You know, I'm glad she stuck with me because there was a lot of struggles there, you know. You might, you know, when I first came up in the suit, you might have thought, you know, what's he doing up there? And the truth is, I'm a lot sicker than I look. You know? So I'm glad that she stuck with me through some of those, you know, rough times. Because I believe there's, you know, we each have this guy on our, the bad guy on our shoulder that's telling us, you know, you're not good enough, you know, you can't do it. Give up, forget about it, quit. It's that's also that bad guy that's saying, oh, that looks like a good idea. You ought to try that, you know. So Al-Anon has given me the chance to at least shut him up a little bit or not act on what that the bad guy on my shoulder says. I'm going to flip through some notes here. One more thing about an offsite. Betty Ann, I think she's spoken here. She had an offsite in Santa Barbara, and it was a fourth step workshop. I went up there, and we break off into groups, and we're in little groups of six. And There's a lady in my group, and, you know, we're getting into some pretty deep stuff, and she, you know, was crying, and we asked her, you know, what do you have there? What have you written down? And she wrote down that she was crying because her husband had stole her dreams, you know, and stolen her future. And I was, you know, looking at that, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, that's what my girlfriend that got me here did. You know, she stole my dreams. She stole my future. And I was sitting there, and I was getting a little bit madder and a little bit angrier and a little bit more pissed off at her. But this program taught me that I got to look in the mirror, and it was at that point that I realized that that's exactly what I had done to my first wife. By leaving her, I had stolen her dreams and her future. And that was a pretty tough thing to have to face up to. And I wouldn't have faced up to it because I had put that amends off for 13 years. But thank God after that workshop, I was able to get a hold of my ex-wife and humble up, apologize for what I had done to her. And our relationship now is a really good relationship. She's the mother of my children. I'm glad that this program gave me that tool to take care of that thing. Let's see, what are some of the things that I do? Some of the things that I do in this program is I make a lot of phone calls. I make about 7 phone calls a day. We have a phone list. It's one of the tools that we have here. And when I first got here, that's what I do. I just call people. You know, if someone I met you at the meeting, I'd just give you a call and say, hey, how are you doing? And you'd be surprised. You know, every time I made one of those calls, I got another tidbit of information that would help me live my life in a better fashion. Why am I here? You know, I want to be a better dad. I want to be a better man. I want to be a better boyfriend, a better father, better son, you know, a better employer, better worker. That's why I'm here. So how do I do that? I do that by listening to what you guys have to say. How do you do it? How'd you do it? It's just a beauty that this program gives us. So I highly recommend that. You know, our literature says talk to people, reason things out. That's one of the gifts that the phone list can give you. I'm going to talk a little bit about the luxury of sponsoring guys. A few years ago, one of the guys that I sponsored after doing some step work, he called me up and he said to me, I had to write it down, it said, I need to let other people live their own lives. By changing myself, others around me are changing, and I'm getting what I want without going crazy. You know, that was a sponsee. He had, you know, a couple of months. You know, what words of wisdom do we get? You know, if you have the opportunity to sponsor somebody and you're doing your step work, I encourage you to do that. I can remember last year doing some step work with a guy, and we work out a path to recovery. You know, it asks some deep questions, and then we sit down and we go to dinner or lunch or whatever it is, and we go over it. And being that he was so thorough in his answers, it took us like 7 hours to go through like a first step. And the restaurant had kicked us out. They know me there. They usually let us hang out, and we had to finish up in the parking lot. And when we got done doing that step work, he said to me, he said, how do you get paid? And I just told him, I said, every sentence you speak, I got paid. And believe me, it's a reciprocal thing. Like I said, I can learn what to do and what not to do, and I also get to be reminded of where I was and where I came from. I had a meeting last night, and the guy was asking, What are your program resolutions? And I thought about it. I've touched on it a little bit here today. And for me, I want to stop ignoring the things that I've learned here that I know that work. It goes along that whole lines of coasting. So if I can do that, if I can just stop ignoring what I've learned here through the step work, through the meetings, through the commitments, and continue to do it, not try to coast, you know, my life goes good. It turns out wonderful. Things go my way. Prior to coming to Al-Anon, I used to look to the sky and I'd say, God, why me? After doing my step work, I know exactly why. I know why. I was a volunteer. I wasn't a victim. You know, I raised my hand for all those things. I jumped in. I said, oh, yeah, I'll give you a hand with that, or I'll help you, or, yeah, she looks very exciting, or, yeah, I'll be your business partner, you know, all those things. So I don't ask why. I know exactly why. I'm the guy. It's that guy in the mirror that made the decisions that upset me once in a while. So a couple of years ago, I had a vow that I would do no more harebrained investments. And it worked, you know. I don't do it anymore. You know, if you have a great idea, you know, good for you. You know? You know? I work. I work and I bust my butt to earn my money. And that's how I do things now. But I learned that here. Another thing I learned here was years ago, I had four homes and I was in panic mode when the market crashed and I didn't know whether to walk away. I just envisioned myself, you know, in the gutter and broke and, you know, I got to get rid of these and I got a short sale. I just got to get out of this. The literature said, talk to people, reason things out. And I got to talk to one of my brothers in this program and he said, I had an apartment building 10 years ago and I panicked and I short sailed it during the last crash. And so what are you saying? I should sell it or not sell it? We don't give advice here. He said, all I can tell you is don't make a decision based on fear. And that's all I was in fear. And that's all I needed to hear. So, you know, the way that worked out, I was in fear for 3 years, so I didn't do anything, you know. Once again, my higher power handled it, you know. He decided to take one of those away, and he decided to leave me with a few, and that's just the way it is for today. You know, if he decides something different tomorrow, that's okay. It's another thing that I learned when I was going through the bouts with anxiety. I was speaking with a gentleman tonight that anxiety for me was I shoulda, coulda, woulda, and dwelling on that, if I'da only. And the other part of anxiety for me was, oh my God, what am I going to do tomorrow? Oh my God, I got to speak in front of all those people tomorrow. What am I going to do? The beauty is that I've learned from the step work is I got to trust my higher power. The step work has taught me. My higher power already knows what's going to happen. I don't. I just got to do the footwork. I got to step through the door. I got to step up to the mic, step up to the plate, and he's got it covered. And that gives me peace. You know, that gives me serenity. Probably about 8 or 9 months ago, I had a real calm feeling of acceptance. That was at the core of it. What was at the core of that acceptance was, I have a higher power. He's got my back. He always has. I just didn't know those things when I first got here. I didn't know that he had my back because I didn't journal. I didn't sit down with a sponsor and say, you know, look at all these things and have him say, yeah, you know, look at all those things, but look at this part of it. Look at the bright side of this or look at the dark side of that. So once again, that's something that I've learned here and I'm forever indebted to that. So another thing that I say is I'm the son, the father, the uncle, the brother, the partner, the friend of an alcoholic. So I've been touched in every aspect of this. You know, I thought that, you know, perhaps I'd be lucky enough that my kids wouldn't do it. And my daughter decided that she was going to. A few years back, her mother had kicked her out. And I said, okay, well, come and live with me. As long as you go to your meetings and stay sober, you can live with me. I just don't want drugs in you or on you. And I learned that from my sponsor. And that worked out for a couple of months. And I came home one day and she had a sad look on her face. And she said, well, Dad, I guess you're going to kick me out. And I said, what do you mean, Lily? I would never kick you out. What happened? She said, well, I want to party. I want to get high. And that's what I'm doing now. So I guess you're going to kick me out. But the program had taught me. I said, you know what, Lil? You decided to move out. I would never kick you out. I love you. You're my daughter. And you decided to move out. And that's okay. And that's a gift that we get from this program. The hardest qualifier in this program for me is when it's our kids. where do we draw the line between being a parent and where do we draw the line between being a preacher or talking at them instead of talking to them. You know, I also have a son. He doesn't know it yet, but he's an alcoholic, you know. He's too young, you know. He's only 18, so he hasn't indulged, you know. But I think even when they were little, I used to tell them, you guys are doomed, you know, it's in the blood. You know, if you want to indulge, you know, you're going to be tempted, but just know that there's these rooms and we can get you better there. Anyway, a little bit about my son. A year ago, he came to me and he said, Dad, I want to move to New Mexico. It was his senior year in high school, and we had grown up in the same place, and he had the same friends. And I said, you know, Brandon, I got adult friends that are in therapy because they moved their senior year. And you're coming to me and you're asking me to move. And he said, well, if I move to New Mexico and I graduate high school there and I maintain my GPA, they'll pay for my college. They take their lottery money and pay for their college. And I'm like, really? And I looked it up and it was true, you know. So I said, you know, this program gave me the ability to say, to do my due diligence, find out that was true, and go, okay, let's go, we're moving. We're moving there, you know. There was only one problem in my mind, and that was I had to tell Laura that, you know. And the truth of the matter is I was dreading that, absolutely dreading that, because every other woman that I had chose in the past, when I came to them that I was moving, would have let me know how selfish I was and what a bad idea it was and how mean I was and how I was inconsiderate I was, and a few cuss words in there too. And I went to Laura and I said, you know, I'm going to move to New Mexico with Brandon. She said, how can I help? That's a wonderful woman there. By doing contrary action in this program, the luckiness that I have of dating a woman in program, I get those gifts, you know. I got to stick around. I got to avoid my temptations, you know. I'm constantly being tempted, like I was saying, whether it's investments or ladies or whatever it is. I have a saying that my higher power, he's up there in heaven and he's in a bar and he's with the devil and they're having a good old time drinking and dancing, and they got a bet on me, you know. And my higher power is like, oh no, Kip, he's got it together, you know. He would never do anything, you know. He understands this program. And the devil's like, and it's a dollar bet they have, and he's like, oh yeah, let's see what he does with this one, you know. So, you know, let's just say that I'm in the beginning there, I was constantly getting opportunities to see if I had learned my lesson. And I just want to thank my friends in this program and my lady for sticking with me while I got to apply this program, learn and practice that I have learned, you know. I have learned my lesson, you know. I know what the right thing is. It's another beauty of sponsorship is that when I'm confronted with something now, I say to myself, what would I tell a sponsee? Would I tell him this is what you should do? Or would I tell him this is what I did? And I want to be able to stand up and say, this is what I did. You know, that's what our program is based on. So that's how I try to do things now. You know, I'm not perfect, but I do the best that I can. Another thing about the step work, I remember that whole first step and the powerlessness of it. But I look at things oppositely sometimes, you know. I was powerless over her drinking, but the reality was I wasn't powerless over my own recovery. We're not. We once you stepped in that door and into these rooms, you're one of the lucky ones. You know, you have an opportunity to break the cycle in your family. You have the opportunity to be an example of recovery, and it's by coming here, getting a commitment, doing the step work, changing your life, being an example. I heard at a meeting one time something like, you might be the only example of recovery that person gets, you know. So I try to remember that thing. I work diligently at my program, and I remember when I was doing the traditions, you know, Tradition 5 states that we're here to help the family and friends of alcoholics. when I was going through that, one of the questions was, you know, are you welcoming to the newcomer? Yeah, I mean, I think that's easy. But am I welcoming to the long-timer or the other person? And it's like, no, I got to start doing that too. But one of the questions in there, or I wrote the next question because my sponsor allows me to do that. When something sparked, I'll write the next question. And what I wrote was, you know, how am I treating my family? You know, how am I treating my brother and my sister, you know, and my cousins? They're all affected by this alcoholism. And the truth was, is I was pretty much turning my back on them. I was holding a grudge against them. I was being self-righteous and thinking, you know, here, I'm in program. This is all you got to do. And that's not how we do it here. You know, we take them in our arms and we say, hey, keep coming back. I'm glad to see you. Glad you made it. How's things going? You know, so I was able to start doing those things. This past Christmas, my son was telling my brother that he's like, I don't know what's gotten into Dad, but he's like, you know, gives the best gifts now. And I do that because what I had done in the past was give a grand to my lady and say, here, you handle it. You know, but that's not being a good uncle or a good dad. Or a good son or a good brother. You know, what I learned in here is, you know, listen to what people are saying. That's what you do at the meeting. You know, listen to what your sister's saying. Listen to what your niece is saying. It's easy to go get gifts when you're listening. You know, so hopefully what I learned in here, you know, take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth, you know. So luckily I was able to do that. But the truth in that statement is if you're new, raise your hand and speak up. And if you get a chance to share, do it, because there's a lot of wisdom. What I love the most about the newcomers, they don't pull any punches, you know. they just tell it like it is. And that's a gift of this program. What else do you guys want to talk about? I know, I got a couple of notes here. I'm just gonna spit out a few of the sayings. As I go through my journaling and stuff, once in a while I'll write down some sayings. So the current saying that I'm working on is, why do I get so upset when someone else's character defects aren't as subtle as mine? I'm going to read that again in case some of you missed that. Why do I get so upset when someone else's character defects aren't as subtle as mine? You know, that's the other beauty of this program. We talk about putting down the magnifying glass and picking up the mirror. About a year ago, I'm going through my regular routine of meetings, and my brain is just turning off as I'm going through the meeting. I'm like, this person raises their hand. I'm like, oh my God, I got to hear that story again. Or, oh my God, why doesn't she just leave him, you know? And I'm, you know, 2 weeks go by, that's all I'm doing is pointing the finger. And what I learned in here is, oh, okay, there's three looking back at me. And the truth of the matter was they weren't making a change. And it was pissing me off. So I had to go back and I had to journal. And what am I doing? You know, what's Kip doing or talking about? And he's not doing it, you know. And for me, it was finances. You know, I hadn't corrected my finances that got screwed up in the previous relationship. You know, I just skirted over it. You know, it's a whole lot easier to look at somebody else than it is to look at yourself. So, you know, luckily I'm starting to do that now and I'm asking for help. You know, I've had friends come over, program friends, and we're doing that. We're getting that stuff done. A lot of damage done there, but that's another beauty of this program. In some old journals, I was looking in an old journal the other night, and one of the things that I had written there was, it was called Creating an Atmosphere of Infidelity Where There Is None. That was a few years back, you know, when I told that story to my buddy Bruce. He said, you know, you can change those words around any way that you want. You know, am I creating an atmosphere of blank, you know, where there is none? You know, and why do I do that? Am I creating an atmosphere of knowledge, of know-it-all, of money? education, experience, you know, where there is none. And why do I do that? I do that, and one of the reasons I'm here in Allenox, I want people to like me. But I don't have to do that anymore. I get to stand up here, and I get to tell you exactly how it is. You know, I get to sit with my sponsor and tell them what my mistakes were. I get to sit with my sponsees and tell them what my mistakes are. And then I get to carry that out into the world, and I get to do those things. I was at a workshop, one of those off-site workshops, and my son had called, and I told him, man, I was just bragging about you. You know, I'm always bragging about the relationship that I have with him. And a couple days later, he said he's off in college now, that is working out, and he said he needed some money. He ran a little short, you know, so I sent him some money, and then I talked to his mom. I'm like, why is he running out of money? I'm always sending him money. And she's like, oh, you didn't tell him? He threw a party at the house there, and he had to pay a fine, and that's why he needed the money. And I called him up, and I'm like, buddy, you know, I'm sitting there bragging at my meetings that we got this great relationship, and you ain't telling me the truth. What's up with that? And he's like, well, I was embarrassed. And I'm like, come on, son, how many embarrassing things has your dad done, you know, over the years, you know, which is true. I'm constantly making a fool out of myself, and he's witnessed it. And he said, hey, you know what, you're right, Dad. I shouldn't be embarrassed, you know, and I'll talk to you from here on out. I'm saying that's all I ask. Just asking you to communicate with me. Program has made me a better dad. You know, I get to do those things. Another thing I want to, how much time do I have, by the way? How am I doing on time? It says 53.
5 minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes? I'm running out of time. Did I get to any of the recovery? Just a couple of quick things. When I was growing up in that alcoholic home, I can remember my dad in one of his drunken things talking about that we were going to climb Mount Whitney, you know, and that was a dream that never happened. I can remember another time when our family was in the driveway, we were loaded up, we were going to Hertz Castle at San Simeon, and he came out, and you know, I just remember the scene, and we unpacked the camper and we didn't go. And another thing I remember in my first marriage, I remember that we were going to go to Alaska for a cruise, and we had our daughter, and we didn't do that. You know, we just skipped over it. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because this past summer, with my brothers in program and some of the guys that I sponsor, we got to climb Mount Whitney this year. It was a big undertaking. We trained for like 4 months, and we were able to do that. So, the help of program, I was able to fulfill one of those things. You know, I don't have to do anything alone anymore. It turns out that my lady had some relatives that lived up near San Simeon, and 2 years ago we got to go to Hertz Castle. I got to do that. And then the Alaska cruise thing, it turns out that the Al-Anon International Convention is in Vancouver, and guess what? There's a cruise after it, and we're signed up and paid, you know, we're going. This program returns to me the things that I thought I had lost or that I thought I couldn't have. But it's only because of showing up, suiting up, showing up, doing the work. I do those things. I do want to stick to the resolution that I have for this year, which is to stop ignoring the things that I've learned in program, you know, that bring me the happiness and serenity that I deserve, you know, because I deserve those things now. I don't have to be long-suffering. I get to walk away from situations that I don't like. I get to say no. It's a complete sentence. I don't have to engage in those kind of things. So again, that's another beauty. Last month, I had the luxury of speaking with one of my sponsees, and we got to fill like a pretty big gap at a meeting. So I got to go on for, an hour and 15 minutes. And it was nice because you don't miss things. So, but there is a phone list. If there's any questions you have, you guys can call me, and I'll be glad to fill in some of those blanks. So I just want to make sure that I didn't forget anything major, which I have. Well, one of those things is, like I was saying, not having to do anything alone. You know, when I came in here, I felt alone. I wasn't going to the family events. Nobody understood. Last month, first of all, tonight somebody mentioned that somebody had passed away, and, you know, that's what happens. you know, as we get older or as things happen, we pass away in this program. And one of the gentlemen that took a cake tonight, he got to be in another state over these holidays and be with one of our other fellow members that passed away. And he got to be with him. And a month ago, someone from my Friday night meeting, Ed Kay, he passed away. And I had the luxury of being with him before he passed. You know, before program, you know, I would have heard, oh, so-and-so's not doing so well. I'd have just gone about my busy life that was too important. But I said, you know what, Ed's a good guy, and he's said a few things, like everyone else at these meetings, that's helped me, and I'm going to go see him. And I got to spend the last few hours of his life with him, and that was a beautiful thing. I can remember the feeling that I had when my relationship didn't work out, my biggest fear of being that I don't want to die alone, or I just don't, you know, I'm afraid, so maybe I'll put up with this a little bit longer, but I don't have to. I've got friends in this program, friends and family, and I want to thank you for that. Before I shut it down, I promised some of you some secrets, if you stuck around, and I just wanted to say that my name's Kip. My home group is Woodland Hills Tradition 5. My sponsor's Chris P. My commitments right now are working with my sponsees, and I'm currently working on the 10th concept. Thanks.